to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K-Wise Whitehead, here again to have a conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Happy Friday, folks. We made it. It has been a long week. There were moments when we felt we wouldn't make it, but we did. On Monday, it was challenging. Tuesday was even worse. Wednesday, we hit hump day. Thursday, we started sliding into weekend mode, and it is Friday. It is time for us to sit back and relax and be thankful and appreciative that another week has come and almost it's gone. Folks, what's interesting is that we talked earlier about what we wanted to cover on the show. What is it that we're thinking about? What are some of the things that we've been wrestling with? Because there's so many stories that come out of Washington, D.C., come out of what's happening in New York, so many stories happening in Baltimore City. We had to focus on what we thought was the most important story. And what really struck us, what really stayed with us, is the amount of violence that has taken place in our city over the last couple of days. We went 10 days where nobody killed anybody. Now, in most places, that's normal. In most places, that's what happens. Here in Baltimore City, that's kind of a little record for us to go that many days where even though people were getting shot, nobody was getting killed. Well, that ended abruptly from Tuesday to Thursday. It just ended. And what ended up happening is we had a single murder, we had a double murder, we had a triple murder, and we had a quadruple murder all happening between Tuesday and last night before the Baltimore Sun went to press, because it's on the front cover of the Baltimore Sun, about the violence that has taken place in our city this week. So what we started thinking about, Justina and I, we started thinking about whether or not we, as Black people in this country, do we hate ourselves? Has it gotten so difficult and so challenging we cannot even see the beauty in ourselves? Did American slavery destroy just about everything we have to offer? I say that because I feel that we're in a state right now that we are trying to, or actively participating in, some type of genocide. And I'm talking about genocide, Black people against Black people. This is a difficult conversation. I know a number of people aren't going to be happy with where we're going with this, but we just want to, as my son would say, we just want to keep it real today. We just want to have an honest conversation. We want to have a challenging conversation, but we want to have a conversation where we talk about who we are and who we want to be. Are we committing genocide? Now, during the Iraq War, we pull some of this documentation. During the Iraq War, 4,504 people were killed during that war. During the Afghanistan War, another 2,384 people were killed. That's during two wars, a little less than 7,000 people. Here in Baltimore City, where we are not at war, since 2011, 2,016 people have been killed in this city. And I want to make a note, we are not at war. But it seems like we are. To have that many people killed, it's like we are at war. In Chicago, another place where we're dealing with an inordinate amount of violence of Black folks against other Black people, 7,916 people have been killed since 2011. And it's interesting because when we looked at the videos and they interviewed some of the young brothers. Now I got to paint this picture for you. The interview of the young brother about violence in Chicago, he's taking the reporter down the street. He's driving. The reporter's in the car beside him. There's a camera person in the back. He's riding with his weapon on his lap. He said, I'm driving into my own community. But up in this community where I live, and this is a predominantly Black community in Chicago, you got to slow down when you drive up in here. If you drive too fast, they're going to start shooting at your car because they don't know what you want. He dropped the speed all the way down. So you got to drive slow so they can see exactly who you are, because if they don't see who you are, then there's a chance you're not going to get out of here. He had his weapon in his lap as he's driving along. Let me tell you this, folks. He slowed down because a brother came running out. The brother runs up to the car with a gun in his hand, just checking to make sure he's okay. He said, hey, you had some other people in the car with you. I wanted to make sure you were fine. He came running up to the car with a gun in his hand while his buddy's driving with a gun in his lap. They said, and this is what got me, they said, we're not like, you know, our fathers and our uncles. We're not just shooting for territory or money. We're shooting because it's a position of power. That the shooting that's taking place, it's not about I need to take another corner. It's not about I need to get another block. It's not about, well, you know, you're selling drugs where I'm working. It's not about that. It is killing simply for the sake of killing. And folks, there is something disturbing to watch young brothers. And I have to say, I don't know the age of this young man, but I'm going to say he's probably in his early 20s. To watch young brothers talk about killing for the sake of killing. That is where we are. Are we committing genocide? Now, I just want to know what the true definition of genocide is. And I say that because I know that we have a lot of young people who listen to the show. I want to be clear that we're all on the same page. Genocide is intentional action to destroy a people, usually defined as an ethnic, national, racial, or religious group in whole or in part. Like the word genocide comes from the Greek word yevko, which means a race or a people, and the Latin suffix cato, which talks about an act of killing. So genocide is the intentional action to destroy a people. Are we committed to destroying ourselves? Oh, I just want to drop that there for a moment. Are we, as Black people, African Americans, Moors, colored people, Negroes, folks of a darker hue, folks who've been touched by the sun, whatever you call yourself. But in this country, given our history of oppression, our history of dealing with slavery, our history of dealing with Jim Crow, our history of dealing with lynching, our history of dealing with the rise of the mass industrial prison complex, our history of dealing with Jim and Jane Crow, with all of that history pushing us at our back, do we hate ourselves? Do we actually not believe that we can make it? Here in Baltimore City, Black people are more likely than white folks, people not of color, PNOCs, to experience educational, economic, and social disadvantages that are compounded by racial inequality and economic segregation. These forces here in Baltimore City are constantly at work. And what they have done is that they've established these economic and social barriers to keep Black people segregated from those who are PNOCs. These barriers have also segregated the crime and the violence. Now, we can talk about the roots of this disparity all day. Redlining, socioeconomic inequalities, lead in our paint and in our waters. We have the school system, which is crumbling, the structures, the buildings that our children are sitting in. This is this paint falling from the ceilings. This is where our children are supposed to learn and supposed to have their genius sparked. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote that as a Black man, when racial issues arise, he was continually asked, how does it feel to be a problem? Now, if you haven't read anything about W.E.B. Du Bois, I would first recommend that you go read some things by W.E.B. Du Bois, but also that you take a minute and you wrestle with his question. How does it feel to be a problem? That there are some people who believe that Black folks, that we are a problem. And there are people who feel that we're a problem who look just like us, who believe that the real people holding us back are other Black people. I'm just throwing this out here because right now, with the level of violence that we're seeing, not just in other countries, right? The level of violence that we're seeing in our own country, on our own shores, in predominantly black communities should give you pause. In Chicago, there's been a run on shootings, a run where it has just felt, according to some of the residents, like they were living in a war zone. Here in Baltimore City, our 10-day lull in killings, when it ended this week, had a single, and let me adjust my numbers, it wasn't just one double, there were two double homicides, a triple, and a quadruple that started on Tuesday and stretched into Thursday night. Think about that. We live in a city that had a single, two doubles, and a triple, and a quadruple murder happening from Tuesday to Thursday. This is not within months, folks. This is in 1 week. It doesn't make any sense. Five people were left dead. Seven were injured. One of the things that got me is that when I saw the video, and this is two people, I don't know who they are, but they were videotaping the ambulance that was sitting at a corner where a black woman had been shot in the head. Now, the ambulance arrived, put her in the ambulance, but they didn't drive off. And so whoever's videotaping, the brother's like, I don't know what's going on. The ambulance is not moving. And the other guy says, well, she must be dead. I can't believe they haven't driven away. Did they find the person? They said dude took off and ran down the alley and said that he didn't even mean to shoot her. He wasn't even reaching for her. He was trying to get somebody else. Four men were shot around 11:15 a.m. Thursday in the 2800 block of Parkwood Avenue. Folks, I just want to stress that these shootings are not happening in the middle of the night. Like, it's not 1 o'clock in the morning when folks are at home resting from work. It's not, you know, 6 a.m. in the morning when folks getting ready to get up. No, no, this is 11:15 a.m. on our work day, and four men were shot. Investigators found three shooting victims in the area, a man who had been shot in the stomach, a 27-year-old man who was shot in the shoulder, and a 39-year-old man who was shot in the leg. Then there was a fourth shooting victim who arrived later at the hospital with graze wounds. When they did the, what they call the gunfire detection systems, now, I don't know any of this terminology, but there's apparently a gunfire detection system that they use, and it uses acoustic sensors to help alert the police to shootings. Well, this high-tech system that alerts the cops to when their shooting is taking place registered 31 gunshots near the scene. I want to say the 31 gunshots yesterday near the scene comes on top of what happened last week when there were 45 shell casings found on a scene of a gunshot. These are gun battles, folks. This is not just gunshots. These are gun battles. Baltimore City, and I've said it, and you didn't like it, but I'm going to say it again. We seem to be at war with ourselves. We can go out and we can march when we're dealing with police brutality. When it's Freddie Gray, we can go. And I understand that because we should hold our police officers to a higher standard. I understand that. But how do we deal with the violence in our own community? Now, one of the people interviewed, his name is William Battle. He's 58 years old. He said, I walk lightly. I just stay in my world. He lives in that community. The quadruple shooting came a day after a triple shooting on Wednesday that left two people dead in East Baltimore. On Tuesday, people said two people were shot in East Baltimore. One of the victims, 42-year-old Lakeisha Clark, later died from her injuries. By Thursday night, that's when the numbers began to rise. And you know what's interesting, folks? The violence this week interrupted what they call, I'm going to use the Baltimore Sun's words, a rare, peaceful period in the city. We live in a city that to have days when nobody is killed is called rare, peaceful moments in our city. 410-319-8888. Are we committing genocide? Is there an active, ongoing movement to kill ourselves? And I know that that's a hard question because we have listeners of all ages. But I'm wondering, if we don't talk about what's happening, if we can't seem to wrap our head around the violence in our cities that in so many ways is defying logic for a lot of people. Why is it that people now settle differences with guns and not with their fists? And I'm not advocating fighting. I'm just saying. 45 shell casings, 31 shots ringing out. There's got to be a better way. It's got to be a better way. And so I want to open it up to you. 410-319-8888. And I want to ask you to lean in with me. Let's have this hard conversation about this city. Let's make some hard decisions today. Let's see what we can do to fix our broken city. 410-319-8888. We have Frank on the phone, a new caller from the Morgan Park area. Frank, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Thank you, Dr. K, for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I don't necessarily think that there is genocide going on in an organized way, but I do think that there is a pathology in this entire country, not just among black people, but in the country, that the outcome is violent. There is a pathology that goes on where violence is an acceptable means of even entertainment. It is glorified. I know that you cited a lot of gun violence, but truth be told, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes, it is.
You're not reporting on the different types of violence that occurs when people are killing each other with blunt objects and bare hands.
Yes.
The other thing is, we talk about the black community a lot. And we've got to define what the black community is, because these kids who are as young as 14, 16 years of age, and up to 25, and after that they start to kind of age out of this stuff.
Right.
They lived somewhere.
Right.
They have family somewhere. So if they're not, if their families are not connected to them in such a way to control them, then somebody else will. And this is what happens. You're seeing it happen at Johns Hopkins, at the malls in where is that?
The young people who are doing all the fighting that's happening at the malls.
Right, correct. Right,
over at White Marsh or over
White
at
Marsh,
Security Mall.
That.
Yes.
Yeah. So when you see that happening, the people who run the show, who have the money that's involved in this, start to exercise the control. And you start to see law enforcement come in and have contact with us, and all they see is the negative side. You see it on television every day. The first thing you see on television is violence by someone.
Right.
And the last thing you see is violence on television. And even our own people are questioning our young people as we see them in crowds, wondering, if I pass them, are they going to harass me?
But you know what? So, and that's what you're saying is something that is real, because how do you lean in when you also have a little bit of trepidation about how the person is going to respond? That you think it might go beyond them just kind of cursing you out and giving you some choice words, right?
Correct.
Yes. I appreciate you. Go ahead, sir. Let me let you finish.
And so at some point, if we're going to talk about the black community, we've got to start examining ourselves. Mm. As you have it in the scripture, and I'm not Bible thumping here, but there's a scripture about healing the land, but there's a process to that.
Okay, now wait a minute. I want to be clear. You know, I would say I'm a pastor's daughter. You're talking about 2 Chronicles 7:14.
Yeah.
It talks about, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves, seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and I will heal the land and forgive their sins. Is that the scripture you're talking about?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
There is a process of recognition that I'm messing up, that I'm doing things that are destructive to me, that are destructive to others. If I want jobs to come into the community, we can't have jobs coming into the community if the customers who would come in here would feel unsafe.
Now, I have to stop you there, Frank. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm just putting it out here. I'm asking the question, the hard question. Are we, as black folks in this country, are we, as black folks in this city, are we, as black folks in inner cities around this country, actively committing genocide? I know it's a hard topic, and I want to be clear that I am not saying this because I hate black people. I'm not saying this because I want to get rid of black people. I'm saying this because I love my people, and I love them hard. And the only way we can get to answers, the only way we can get to solutions is for us to lean in and have the hard conversations. I know it's Friday, but come on and lean in with me. Let's see if we can turn this thing around. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, Deshaun, Clarence, Charles, Brad, Don, Kevin, I'm coming right to you. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, we're having a conversation, a hard conversation. Neil Eiffel's checked in. He said, you know what? It's a sad topic today. We're talking about whether or not Baltimore City, black folks in Baltimore City, are we committing genocide? And I know that people are screaming probably at the radio, at me, wondering why on a Friday I'm doing this topic, wondering why I'm saying that we're doing something to ourselves, wondering why I'm not blaming structural inequality and racism and white supremacy and white nationalism. I blame all of that. I'm also saying that with the number of people that have been shot and survived in this city to deal with what we call continuous traumatic stress disorder, the number of people who've been shot and killed in this city, if 2016 people have been killed in this city since 2011, then I'm going to go out on a limb and saying probably four times as many folks have been shot. And if four times as many folks have been shot, then another 20 times as many folks are dealing with the trauma that comes from that. That's why I'm wondering, are we committing genocide? Do we hate ourselves? I'm wondering about that. I mean, I know we can lift everything up and we could talk about, you know, black power and loving our brothers. We could talk about all that. But I'm wondering, did American enslavement instill in us a deep-rooted hatred of ourselves? 410-319-8888. Tough topic today. Come on and lean in with me. I have Deshaun on the phone. Deshaun from Baltimore. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Dr. Whitehead. I just want to answer the question in regards to are we committing genocide as far as black people in America or in Baltimore City. So I think that the answer is yes. My answer is going to be yes, we are. However, I would say that it is not intentional. Does it come from American slavery that took place? I would say that is a part of it, only because of the identity situation that took place with us. However, that's just a small part of it. The main thing I think is one of the things that you said, you was watching some interview that took place in Chicago.
Yes.
You're talking about the thing as far as like they're not fighting over territory, but they're fighting. I mean, it's a fight for power.
Yes.
And here is something that I've observed. I do a lot of observing about the behavior of, you know, just different races, but mainly my race. I'm dealing with the black race. So this is what I come to find out, that the males always identify themselves as kings or gods, okay? When you identify yourself as something like that, as a king or a god, like, I mean, we can think about it, and that deals with having power and having a certain type of power as a god or king. And when you have a lot of those walking around rather than identifying with each other as brothers, then guess what happened? When if I identify myself as a king, and another guy identify himself as a king, but yet he disrespect me or I disrespect him,
right,
then I have this ego. It's the ego. And Charlemagne the God, he talked about it one time. He actually mentioned it a few times. Some of like the black male ego. He's like, when it's shattered, how we respond to it. And it's violent. But it's because we're walking around with the wrong identity of each other, of ourselves, number one, but then also of each other. So rather than looking at someone as a brother and then keeping them on that same level as myself, right, and giving that same respect, no, I'm a God, don't disrespect me, or I'm a king. It's a mentality, but you hear it a lot in the rap music, Dr. K. You hear it a whole lot.
That's what I'm saying. There you go.
In rap music, it's the identity situation, right, and that's the first thing. Yes, did it take place during American slavery? Yes, but we cannot leave it right there because we actually have so many books available. We have so many people that are trying to like reach out. You have people that's part of the clergy and the church. Outside of the church, you have community activists. We don't have an excuse at this point right now, Dr.
Right, I agree.
I agree.
Thank you so much, Deshaun. Folks, I like something that Deshaun brought onto the table, that the teaching to Black people of this hatred of ourselves. I'm just want to lay this out here, that the teaching is not necessarily something that has been intentional, not within the Black community. They're not intentional. I'm not sure if a Black mother is teaching her son to hate himself. But we're socialized in a country that has mandated the oppression of Black people. And then let me tell you what I mean by that, because I was teaching about this in my class today with my students. And I said, you know, when you think about the history of this country, we live in a country where oppression was mandated. Oppression was legal. Oppression is what allowed this country to build itself with very little resources. They had the resources that rested on the backs of Black men, women, and children. Oppression was mandated. And when legalized slavery ended, then what began to happen with that mandated oppression, it began to be fed into the roots of the ways in which we developed as a nation. So I'm talking about from the political system to the economic system to the social norms, that this notion of oppression became something that was taught over time, from generation to generations. Sometimes it was explicit teaching, like during slavery, where you own these people, right? Sometimes it was implicit, like during Jim Crow. Your area is dirty and that's all you deserve. Or you go into the Black side of the train and there are no seats there, so everybody's sitting on the floor. And you go into the white side and they're sitting in big, pristine, cushy seats. So that's the implicit teaching, right? We talk about implicit bias. That's implicit teaching. You're not telling me I'm less than. I can just see it in my surroundings. The implicit teaching that when I look at some schools here in Baltimore City, some schools that cost money in Baltimore City, some schools that call themselves independent in Baltimore City. Then I go over to some of my public schools. You're not telling Black children they are inferior. You're just putting them in conditions where the ceiling is falling down on them. They don't have any heat. They don't have clean water. You don't have to tell them they're inferior. They see it every day. And that's what I mean. Have we been taught to hate ourselves? And are we committing genocide as a result of it? I have Charles on the phone from the Dahman area. Charles, how are you, sir?
Oh, yeah, I'm in Eldersburg now.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, I'm doing good. Well, first of all, I got to say, we're not Black and we're not African. But let me also say, you know,
I said all the names today. I thought about you. I actually said all the names. I said Moors. I said people of a darker skin. People have been touched by this. I said all of them today because I didn't want to get caught up in the color race thing. I wanted to get into the conversation.
Okay, right. But let me just say that this has an African place theme to it.
Okay.
So let me just get into this. The indoctrination has been solidified by white supremacy.
Right.
And I'm talking about the indoctrination of our children, our young men, and our young women. They have solidified their relationship with white supremacy.
Okay.
And now they are enacting the behaviors of white supremacy. See, when we look at Africa, they went through the same thing that we were going through. They were enslaved in their country just mm-hmm. like we were enslaved in our country. But when we look at Africa today, they're going through a lot of ethnic cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that they're pushing onto us. See, first they have to set the precedent, and then they start the whole system. So Africa was where they set the precedent,
okay,
where they started to give us some power, to give us some position, to give us back some of what was, well, not ours, the Africans, to give them back some of their own autonomy.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop you there only because I do agree with you, Charles. I do hear you, Charles, because you know you and I are on different sides when it comes to this. But I'd like to ask you, just for the sake of listeners who haven't done apparently the deep study that you've done on the Moors and the fact that we're not Africans and this is our original land, would you be kind enough to hold on? Why don't you get our email address? Why don't you send us the research that you use? I always believe, and I tell my students, I tell my sons, hey, when I say something, and I'm telling you, my listeners, when I say something, feel free to say, hey, Dr. K, where did you get that from? I should be able to back up everything I'm saying with my research. I do not get on this mic and spout just my opinion, what I think is happening. It's all based in all the study I've done, and I'm more than happy to pass on my books, to show you my notes, to show you some of the resources I use to draw some of the conclusions that I'm offering up to you. And I think if you come on the air and you're laying out how we were the original people in this land, so you're now erasing people who are native to America, you're saying we're not Africans, you got to be able to share some of the research, and I will read it. Trust me, I will read it. This is Clarence from Baltimore coming up next. Clarence, how are you?
Thanks for taking this call.
Absolutely.
I want to say this, Dr. K, and this is not any, you know, a remark against you, but see, me, I'm of the mindset that as a black person, I'm going to protect the worst in my community from the outside element in hopes that somehow I can get around to them and change their behavior, you know, because there's an inference in this conversation that there's something wrong with our youth or us as a people, that we have some type of psychological affliction that we would want to kill ourselves, commit genocide against ourselves. If I was sitting in Dr. Winbush's classroom right now, my question would be, well, what are the conditions that would so psychologically impair
an
individual or their youth that would make them behave in such a manner? Because other than asking that question, I would have to adhere to the fact that maybe there's something wrong with them. Okay, but...
Now, I want to say this. I don't want you to hang up. I just want to respond to that. But I did, though, Clarence. I mean, you were on hold. I actually went through and started with the legalization of slavery, and I came all the way through. I actually offered that up.
Dr. K, slavery and the history of slavery has never in my entire life made me want to go out and shoot another black person or harm another black person just because they were black or, you know, never, not any day. I think that's a goofball excuse, and I that just irritates me to hear that. Do we hate ourselves? No, we don't hate ourselves.
You don't hate black people. You can't say we. Can you speak for all black folks, Bo? Can you?
Excuse for it will be this. When you socially segregate a group of people by lack of education and educational deprivation and lack of resources, and then you confine them, they're confined, and you throw all the guns and drugs and alcohol conditions, then describe to me what type of behavior that the people who have orchestrated this would expect to come out of that community.
Like it's some big experiment, right?
But this was orchestrated, Dr. K.
Okay.
We know this. When you look at the construct and the way that this city is, that this country is right now, where the blacks are mostly segregated in these isolated pockets of poverty, while, you know, I mean, we've branched out. But that's the problem, because we have a dual mindset there. We have blacks on the outside who have slipped through the cracks and got into Baltimore County and the other places where they live at. And they're looking back at the people that live in the city that, you know, as if something's wrong with. I live in the city. There's nothing wrong with me.
I live in the city as well.
Dr. K, I could wallpaper some people's living room wall. Not with degrees, but with certificates in technology that I have. So what I'm saying is this. You should be trying to pass that on to every individual that you can with a talk and try to change the behavior. This conversation on the radio is an inference that aids, that feeds and abets that view that our enemies have of us. That's the only thing I have.
I agree with you, Clarence, and I will tell you this. I agree with you in terms. I need to stop saying that. Justina's looking at me. I hear you, Clarence. I also believe, and I stand strongly with that, putting the question out there and giving you, I mean, almost 4 minutes to refute it, I think allows us to have this. I mean, I actually stopped talking so you can share because I wanted to hear the other side. I'm not just speaking out into the radio for 2 hours. No, I'm having conversations and giving people. Today is one of the few days that we say, you know, we're not doing the 2 minute cutoff. We want to hear from people. That's what we're doing today. Thank you so much, Clarence. I appreciate you. All right, folks, we have Michael on the phone, a new caller from Columbia. Michael, how are you? And welcome to the family.
How are you?
I'm doing
it's
well.
Probably got a lot to do with poverty. You look at the American Indian, and basically the same things are going on with them as far as the rates for drug abuse and genocide, self-genocide, I guess you could call it. But I think it's been perpetuated amongst us for the many years of slavery, and it's stuck. So I'll take your answer off the air.
I appreciate you. Thank you. It's a question, folks. In no way am I saying that black folks do hate us. I'm not saying that. I'm only asking. We got to figure out what is it that is finding its way into the hearts and minds of some of our people where the only result, the only solution is to shoot to kill. I'm just asking the question. Do I think black folks are committing genocide? I'm sorry, I'm looking at these numbers and I'm concerned. When you tell me that 7,900 people have been shot in Chicago since 2011 and over 2,000 people have been shot and killed in Baltimore since, yeah. I mean, when you talk about the numbers versus war zones, yeah, I'm concerned. So what can we do? If we don't hate each other, if we don't hate ourselves and we love ourselves and we love our people, then why can't we find a way to turn this around? I'm just asking. In the last 4 days, we've had a single shooting. We've had two doubles. We've had a triple, a quadruple. The number of people who've been killed from having 10 days of a respite has just reached up to the next level. I'm throwing the question out here. Just having a conversation because I want to know what I should do better. We have Don on the phone from East Baltimore. Don, how are you?
Yes, good evening, Dr. K and the family.
Good evening.
In my opinion, this is a side effect of a bigger problem.
Okay.
Question. Can you create a situation and predict the outcome?
No.
Sure we can.
I'm saying no, because even when you're doing it in a science lab, there's always a little element of space that there's unpredictability, right?
Yeah, there's unpredictability. Okay. Unpredictability as a result of that is the side effects. What is the black community going on there?
Okay.
You know, if you don't have the power to create something, I'm talking about creating it on a massive scale. Baltimore is not the only city that's going through this.
No, it's not.
If you look at any news,
Chicago,
all over this nation,
Harlem, Detroit,
the same thing.
Yep.
And that's not happenstance. This stuff is playing on a bigger scale. If you do not have the power to create it, you definitely don't have the power to stop it. You got to watch out for that hidden hand, and it's all about the money. It is all about the money. These kids in these communities, young kids in these communities, it's a matter of survival for them. Some of the educated ones are the ones who got out of the community, you know what I mean, ain't looking back. But for these young kids, that's what it is. That's what they got these guns to protect the turf, protect this and that, because they don't know too much anymore better. That's exactly what it is. But that unpredictable hand, how do all these guns and drugs getting into America? Yeah. You don't see a lot of terrorist bombs and stuff getting into America, do you?
Nope.
we got to ask the bigger question. We keep asking these, I ain't going to say a mom and pop questions, because these lives that's been taken is bigger. But
right.
these are side effects, though, Dr. K. These are side effects about that bigger hand and that unseen man that's making all that money. It's all, when it all bottom line come down to it, it's all about the dollar bill.
There you go. There you go. It's all about it. Say it, brother. Say it. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Folks, that just hit it right on the head. When you talk about the issues in our community, and he brought in, you know, we're talking about Harlem, talking about Detroit, talking about Chicago, like it's not just happening here in Baltimore City, but there is a war going on in our community. And I think that part of the responsibility in the war is, of course, to go back to the root of the war, to blame the purveyors of war. Let's be very clear. It's not America at war that concerns me. It's America as war that keeps me up at night. But at the same time, can I also hold my people responsible and say, hey, we've got to do better. Like Maya Angelou said, when you know better, you do better. We have Kevin on the phone from Baltimore. Kevin, how are you?
All right. How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
Well, I agree with a lot of your callers. We got to go back. First of all, I like to tell people to go and watch the 13th.
Yes. Ava DuVernay's documentary, award-winning documentary called 13th, folks.
Yes, that'll tell you a whole lot about what's going on now.
Break it down.
They built up from years ago all the way up until, to now pretty much. We're talking about COINTELPRO. COINTELPRO was in the past, but it's also on now. I mean, going on now.
Right.
Because when you think about it, you say, hey, we can teach our kids, one thing, but once they get out in the world on their own, they're going to see and learn other things. So what are they listening to? They're listening to hate, self-hate, N-word this, N-word that. When they play their video games, what are they seeing? What are they doing? Violence. And I'll say this also, not just in Baltimore, but a lot of the Chicago's and Detroit's and Philly's or whatever. They're not trying to stop the crime. They're just trying to contain it.
You know what? I'm just going to say amen. That is exactly what it is. Stop it. Contain it.
Right. As long as it stays in within our black communities, then they're fine. The minute that we saw that during the uprising.
Saw it in Ferguson as well. Contain it to that community.
Yeah. The minute they tried to go downtown, you saw what happened.
Right.
Now, I will say this. It was safer when we had the armed National Guard and all of that stuff here in the city. That was probably the longest, I think, in my opinion, when they were here.
Yeah.
They didn't have any violence. If that's what we need to do, then that's what needs to be done.
So you're saying that in our communities, and I'm just going to just drill down into Baltimore City, you're saying if it takes bringing the National Guard in here, turning our city into like a micro police state, if that's what it takes to stop the violence, then you're saying so be it.
So be it.
All right.
And I'll say this also. Let me preface that too. I don't usually like saying stuff like that because that's a double-edged sword. But I mean, I saw it with my own eyes, and I'm proud. I grew up in that neighborhood. I grew up on Pennsylvania Avenue. That was the longest. When they were here, we didn't really have any violence going on.
All right. Thank you so much, folks. I just want to say, when people start talking about solutions, listen to what Kevin just said. A solution is to bring in the National Guard to turn Baltimore into a mini police state. I want to say that I want folks to give me a call. 410-319-8888. And I want to reach out to two demographics specifically. And I never do this. And today I am. One, I would love to hear from new people joining our conversation. If you are a new caller, tell Justina we will move you up to the top because we want to hear from some new voices, some new perspectives, some new ideas. And I want to make a special appeal to ask callers who gender identify as female to call us. So far, I've heard from all the voices who they seem to gender identify as male. But I'd like to hear from some sisters. And you don't have to be an African-American to chime in. Your perspective is interesting and could add something to the conversation. We have Sharon on the phone from Baltimore. Sharon, how are you?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
All right. Am I on the air?
You are on the air, Sharon.
Okay, I called before. I'm a genuine female. And
how
I
you
like
doing?
Who I am. I've called before, and I do want to say slavery or whatever, they did a good job because blacks, I do believe they did a condition to us mentally. I've been mistreated mostly, I'm not even going to get into it, by blacks the most. We expect it among whites.
Right.
But mostly my own kind. And I've called you before, and I've also been up at the station and wanted to give my story. Now, I had one child. He was killed, even though he was into things. But he was killed by another black. My son was killed by another black person, another black male.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So, yes, I don't know. Blacks, I've been mistreated personally the most worst by black.
Wow. All right. Thank you so much, Sharon. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Folks, hard conversation. Hard conversation. Now, take this conversation in light. We start talking about cities that are at war. I think it is important. I think it's important to add that not only are we dealing with this violence here in our city, there's also a lot of things happening in politics. Let's not forget that today, the Greater Baltimore Committee, made up of CEOs of major corporations here in Baltimore City, presidents of Hopkins and Morgan, president of universities, have all come together as a board and released a statement calling on our mayor to resign, that she no longer has the moral authority to lead this city. So when we talk about the violence happening in our streets and you're talking about an unstable political climate, where then do the answers come from? We have Cornelius on the phone from Owens Mills. Cornelius, how are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thank you. Basically, I want to say I don't think we're living under any genocide, but more ignorance.
Mm.
I think as a people, we're being ignorant of the fact of the things that we're doing to ourselves, and we don't have accountability. I try not to, and I teach my kids not to keep, you know, blaming slavery or blaming a white man or things of that nature. If at some point, in order to fix something that's broke, you have to take accountability. You can't fix it if you don't take accountability for your issues. At the end of the day, as black folks, we have to take some accountability to what we are doing to ourselves and stop pointing fingers.
And don't get mad when other people are saying, let's just talk about taking some responsibility, right? We're just talking about it. Thank you so much, folks. I got to stop you there. I have a hard out. I can have you hold on, though, and we'll come to you after the break, Cornelius. When we come back, folks, I got Valerie, I got Linda, I got Fred, I got Jamal, I got Brown from Sandtown. Maybe Cornelius will call back, but there's a line open for you. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, let's broaden our topic. Let's talk about the mayor and GBC calling for her to resign. Let's talk about whether or not Baltimore City is broken and how we can fix it. Let's also play some Chaopoly. Maybe we can lighten it up a little bit because it is a hard and heavy topic for Friday afternoon. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. It's an honor and a pleasure, and I will be back with you after the break.
And a good afternoon. On the Penn Line, we've got train 426 running about 10 minutes late heading into the Baltimore area. Local link bus diversions include the Purple Line eastbound diverting at Pratt and Payson, and the Purple Line westbound diverting at Lombard and Monroe, the Yellow Line northbound diverting at McCullough and Gold, the Yellow Line southbound diverts at Druid Hill and Whitelock. Currently, the light rail link running on time, no problems in the Metro subway link. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.